From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates nationwide. Supreme Court justices on Wednesday heard arguments in the third version of Donald Trump's Muslim ban after multiple lower courts had rejected the constitutionality of the orders in their various forms. As protesters against the ban rallied outside the court, the two justices, Anthony Kennedy and John Roberts, who Muslim American advocates had counted on to side with the liberal wing of the court, appeared to favor the president's position. Meanwhile, a new report by the Council of American Islamic Relations on the state of Muslim American civil rights has found that over the first full year of the Trump administration, Islamophobic incidents rose dramatically in the U.S. Most strikingly, the report found that, quote, federal government agencies instigated 35% of all anti-Muslim bias incidents recorded in 2017. My guest is Robert McCaw. He is the Director of Government Affairs at the Council on American Islamic Relations. Welcome to the program, Robert.
Thank you for having me.
So first, let's talk about the Muslim ban arguments. I mentioned lower courts had repeatedly rejected this. It finally ended up at the Supreme Court. And on Wednesday, where as Supreme Court justices heard both sides of the arguments, you, I understand, were among the people on the outside saying no ban, no wall. What was the atmosphere like outside the court?
It was a well-charged atmosphere. We had nearly 200 people rallying before the Supreme Court. The rally started at 8:30 in the morning and went all the way to 11 with chants, speakers, and some word poetry.
And inside, attorneys were briefing the justices on the Muslim ban. Now, in lower courts had found that Trump's own words, his own tweets, campaign statements, explaining that the Muslim ban or the travel ban was specifically singling out Muslims, that had been a factor in lower court decisions. As far as you can tell, were the Supreme Court justices on Wednesday also including that in their considerations of the constitutionality of the ban?
I think the Supreme Court justices were very aware of Trump's comments. What they're debating is whether they should consider Trump's anti-Muslim comments or the executive order itself, by itself. And the questions were aimed at whether they should or shouldn't. And it yet remains to be seen if Trump's anti-Muslim statements, tweets, other posts on social media, if that will actually have an effect in their interpretation. And if it does, then we're very sure that the Supreme Court would then have to rule as the two other lower courts had, that this is discrimination, that it's executive overreach, that it violates the Establishment Clause, not elevating one religion over another, or in that it violates National Immigration Acts.
And so I understand that the lawsuit was brought by the state of Hawaii. In fact, it was the an Obama administration era Solicitor General Neil Katyal who was representing that state against the current Solicitor General Noel Francisco. And who exactly besides the state of Hawaii is involved? I understand that there are also some unnamed individuals that have essentially tried to make the case to the court that they have personally been deeply impacted by the bans thus far?
You know, I'm not aware of that just because I haven't been handling the legal proceedings of this case, but I know that there have been a number of personal accounts, individuals affected by the ban, that they're referenced in the state of Hawaii's case. And also there's a competing case in the 4th District Court that's on hold right now, in that there are dozens of plaintiffs, at least in the 4th District, waiting. They have been personally affected, and many of these are American citizens. And so I would assume that a number of affected individuals illegally impacted by this executive order are pleading to the justices to hear their case, to take in their considerations.
Right, and Kerr filed an amicus brief in this case. It was interesting. Justice Roberts asked if there was a statute of limitations on the presidential's campaign statements, which was troublesome, of course, I understand, because people worried that, as we were talking about earlier, Trump's statements about the Muslim bans and his anti-Islamic statements might be not considered by justices. Justice Elena Kagan made a really interesting point, I thought, Robert. She said, imagine if this ban was basically targeting Jews rather than Muslims, you know, would we accept the constitutionality of this? Another aspect that came out of the arguments, which I know a lot of people found very troubling, was that the attorney representing the government, Noel Francisco, referred to Islam as a country. He referred to the entire religion of Islam as a
country. There's a whole meme out of that right now.
What's that?
So there's a whole meme traveling the internet on that one statement right now that Islam is a country.
And to you, what does that suggest about the ignorance of the government?
I think this government has an unfamiliarity with Islam. You know, Trump, while he was campaigning, says Islam hates America. Islam is not a person. In the Supreme Court case, we heard Islam was a place. Islam is not a place. We have also bigots on the street that will yell at people to go back to Islam. And so it's the street-level ignorance of Islam, of Muslim Americans, of Muslims abroad, that impacts this federal government's ability to make clear, rational decisions about our nation's national security and also how to balance Muslim considerations just throughout the federal government and how the government engages Muslims domestically. So it's ignorance. There's a lot of ignorance here. But I want to go back, and I was really horrified by the government's attorney when he essentially said that Trump, or in this case, a fictitious candidate, could run on an anti-Semitic platform, be elected as president, and on day one, ban Jewish people from overseas, from Israel, from entering America. That would violate, the Establishment Clause, National Immigration Acts, and this on its face should be unconstitutional.
Right. This was Justice Elena Kagan who asked Noel Francisco about this hypothetical anti-Semitic candidate. She added, "This is an out-of-the-box kind of president in my hypothetical." It would seem clear what she was referring to. And Mr. Francisco, just to go back to the Islam as a country comment, this is what he said. He said he, meaning the president, has made it crystal clear that Muslims in this country are great Americans and that there are many, many Muslim countries who love this country. And he has praised Islam as one of the great countries of the world. So the level of ignorance within the administration on Muslim Americans, on Islam, is quite stunning. How has that played out in practical terms in the year 2017? Let's turn to the report that CARE put out. This is a report on the civil rights of Muslim Americans. The report is called Targeted. And how does 2017, the first year of the administration, compare to previous years in terms of incidents of hate and Islamophobia?
CARE found that there was an overall 17% increase in anti-bias incidents targeting Muslims, and that's totaling nearly 2,600 cases of anti-bias incidents, while we also found there was a 15% increase in anti-Muslim hate crimes. Those were over 300 incidences. Now, turning to the president's executive order, where we actually have Muslim travelers or other Americans being impacted by this order, 464 individuals had been impacted by this ban, and that could be profiling by CBP officers, unnecessary delays, other activities like that. But overall, since President Trump increased the level of anti-Muslim rhetoric that we saw in the campaign cycle in 2016 and had 1 year of governance in 2017, we saw a total increase of anti-Muslim incidents across the board, across the nation. And we put the blame on the president.
So essentially, whether or not his Muslim ban is legally accepted, the damage to Muslim Americans and Muslims in America is pretty serious already, right? Because the president has signaled to the country that Muslims are not welcome. Muslims should be treated with suspicion by his own words and rhetoric.
We see a pattern of hate crimes that still continue to this day, where Muslim houses of worship and other minority communities are tagged with spray paint or vandalism, where Trump's own name is invoked as part of that hate crime. His words are definitely inspiring hostile violence, negativity towards American minority community members, including American Muslims.
There were, I understand, anti-mosque incidents around the country as well. I mean, for a country that prides itself on religious freedom, particularly conservatives who beat on the drum of respecting the religious freedom of Christians, there seems to be very little religious freedom being respected when it's a non-Christian, in particular a Muslim religion.
It's true. Muslim houses of worship and community centers attract violence, attract vandalism. There have been a number of cases where they have been broken into, vandalized internally. Several were set on fire last year. There's a whole gamut of different types of insidious acts of violence that are targeting our houses of worship. The Justice Department has thankfully, even under Sessions, believe it or not, taken a serious response to these incidences, but they're still occurring with quite frequency.
I want to go to specifically the government incidents. So 35% of all incidents are related to government agencies. And you mentioned the BP, which is a Border Patrol. So majority of incidents, I understand, were from that agency, likely related directly to the Muslim ban, but also 270 incidents linked to the FBI,
Definitely. The
TSA, ICE. So this seems to be something across various agencies.
It is. And, you know, actually, once Trump won the election, we especially saw an uptick in reports from CBP. And that was because we believe there was signaling within the middle management of CBP that we have new leadership coming in, and that leadership does not care about these types of complaints. So it's really, it's open season on Muslims. The same can be said about the FBI, where we've seen an increased aggressiveness just in wider phishing operations, if you would, where they're knocking on more doors, trying to find more leads, but not necessarily having a cause that they're going after, but just trying to seek general information from the community, but it's ratcheted up.
And what are the impacts on Muslim children? I know that CARE has done some work on the bullying that Muslim children face. Does the Civil Rights Report also address how Islamophobia trickles down into bullying against children, either who are Muslim or perceived to be Muslim?
Sure. So our report does cite several instances of anti-Muslim bullying, whether that's from school faculty or fellow students. Our more comprehensive report on bullying, though, comes from CARE California, one of our largest chapters on the West Coast. They found that nearly half of all Muslim students were bullied in 2016,
wow,
and that nearly 30% of those incidences actually came from faculty members.
Wow.
Now, that's not to blame all teachers or faculty members in cases of anti-Muslim bullying, but it's a significant factor that needs to be addressed.
In fact, let's watch a video of the report that CARE produced. Here's a short video summarizing some of the findings from the 2018 Civil Rights Report called Targeted.
A 5-year-old boy arrived at the airport with his mother, eager to fly to America to be reunited with his father. After years of waiting, him and his family would finally have the opportunity to be together again. Unfortunately, his dream crumbled. The day that he and his mother went to the airport, President Trump signed the first unconstitutional Muslim ban. In 2017, CARE found that federal government agencies, including U.S. Customs and Border Protection and the FBI, were responsible for 35% of all anti-Muslim bias incidents. Of these, 50%, or 464, were directly a consequence of the unconstitutional Muslim ban. In another incident early last year, a Texas family was enjoying a warm, sunny day at the beach when a man approached them and launched into an obscene tirade.
Trump, motherfucker! Donald Trump! Donald Trump, got you!
CARE recorded a 17% increase in anti-Muslim bias incidents in 2017 over 2016. This was accompanied by a 15% increase in hate crimes targeting the American Muslim community, including children, youth, and families. The number one trigger of these incidents was found to be the target's ethnicity or national origin. As is evident, not only has the number of anti-Muslim bias incidents increased, but the violent nature of these incidents has also risen. To read the full report on the status of American Muslim civil rights in 2017, go to Islamophobia.org.
And that's a short video about CARE's 2018 report on the civil rights of Muslims. The video is available on Islamophobia.org along with a full report called Targeted, that we've been discussing. So taken together, you have a situation where the Trump administration is pushing this rhetoric, pushing a legal, discrimination against a specific religion. You would expect Supreme Court justices, as they hear arguments in the third version of the Muslim ban, to understand the social context, to not be part of a new chapter of discrimination. I mean, we recall that when Japanese Americans were interned after World War II, they were done so with the blessing of the Supreme Court, only to, years later, the U.S. look upon that as a shameful chapter in the country's history. Why is the Supreme Court potentially going to support Trump on this, as news reports have suggested? And I understand that the decision is going to come down in June.
So, there have been several great sins on the Supreme Court. The Korematsu decision, where they permitted the government to continue the internment of Japanese Americans, is one of our darkest chapters. Anthony Scalia actually said it was one of the greatest sins of the courts. We hope that they do not make the same mistake when it comes to American Muslims, and that they can even address past wrongs. I know that the Korematsu Institute and Japanese American Citizens League, that they issued amicus briefs arguing that under the same arguments that were made under Korematsu, they apply to Muslims under this Muslim ban, that it's not just profiling by nationality now, but it's profiling by nationality and religion. And if we actually go to the Fourth District Court, the case CARE was involved in, Judge Chung said to the government's attorney, I don't want another Korematsu on my hands. And that was in reference to the government hiding the fact that it actually had evidence to the contrary, that Japanese Americans did not pose a national security threat. But that evidence remained hidden until it was discovered in the 1980s in the National Archives. And the government's attorney in the Fourth District Court actually refused to swear to the judge that whatever secret evidence, national security arguments that were being used inside the Trump administration, that they were actually fully reflected in the writing of this third Muslim ban executive order. So when the government says, trust us, there's a national security concern, history tells us that we can't necessarily trust the government. And we hope the court sides with the people on this one.
Right. And by the way, finally, there's also been reports, and we can see from statistics of who's allowed to come into the country, that while this is now the third version of the Muslim ban, but while the various versions of the Muslim ban have been held up in courts, that essentially there has been a sort of de facto gatekeeping at airports in the U.S., at the places where people apply for visas, specifically targeting Muslims. There was a piece recently on NPR showed that Muslim immigration to the U.S. is down sharply since Trump took office. Thousands of refugees and other would-be criminals have been caught up in the administration's rapidly shifting immigration policies, leaving families scattered on opposite sides of the border. So again, the damage, is even as the Supreme Court is deciding this case, the damage is already happening, right?
The damage is happening. Less visas are being issued. Less refugee visas are being issued. The total number of refugees that the Trump administration is willing to admit into the United States has been cut from 100 to 50,000. And then just meeting that quarterly goal for the first 4 months of this year, they were under by several thousand for refugees. So there is an administrative slowdown, and really it just signals a lack of willingness to accept Muslim travelers and refugees into the United States. We can also see that this administration is equally hostile to Latino, Latinx immigrants in the United States with the cancellation of the TPS for a number of communities. And so there's a hostility in this administration to people of color. There is a white supremacist agenda with this administration. We do not see the same slowdown for people from European countries. It's targeted.
Well, I want to thank you so much, Robert, for joining us today. Where is a good website for people to be able to get information on the report specifically that CARE put out?
You can go to our website, Islamophobia.org. It will host the report on its front page. You can also go to CARE's website, cair.com. There should be a recent press release on that, the Supreme Court hearing, and other matters to the Muslim community.
Robert, thank you so much. We'll post links to that from our website.
Thank you so much.
Robert McCaw is Director of Government Affairs at the Council on American Islamic Relations, or CARE. We've been discussing the Supreme Court hearing, its arguments on the Muslim ban, and CARE's new civil rights report. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Also find us on Facebook, Twitter, iTunes, and Vimeo.